All right. Okay, the Senate Committee on Human Services will come to order. We'll go ahead and start with the, we just have a couple of work sessions to plow through, and we'll move into the public hearings. We are going to hold over a couple of bills that are not ready today. So Senate Bill 263, Morgan's in the room. Are you around here somewhere, Bob Jundiff? Bob Jundiff is watching somewhere on TV. Hi, Bob Jundiff. We're so close. We're very close to everybody agreeing. It's very exciting. So stay tuned, and we will hold this over until Wednesday.
Which one?
This is Senate Bill 263. And we're going to go through an order so we don't accidentally kill something because of my chaotic brain. Okay. We are going to open up a work session on Senate Bill 1018.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, let me find my paperwork here. Senate Bill 1018 establishes the Oregon Deaf, Deafblind, and Hard of Hearing Program within the Department of Human Services. It establishes the Oregon Deaf, Deafblind, and Hard of Hearing Committee to administer the program, and it specifies components of the program and duties of the committee. It becomes operative January 1st, 2018, and takes effect 91st day following sine die. There is a dash one amendment which replaces several provisions. Including it modifies the definitions and requires DHS to define terms by rule. It modifies membership of the Oregon Deaf, Deafblind, and Hard of Hearing Committee to advise DHS, and it establishes the Oregon Deaf, Deafblind, and Hard of Hearing Program as to be administered by the DHS in consultation with the committee. It specifies the components and mandates of the program, and it requires DHS to contract with certified sign language interpreters in consultation with the committee. There is a fiscal impact issued on the dash one and a no revenue impact issued on the dash one. The bill was originally heard on March 29th, and there is a sub-referral to Joint Ways and Means.
Thank you. And before Senator Dimbro makes the motion, I just wanted to acknowledge, I know there was a lot of communication this weekend, and recognize that there are many ongoing conversations to be had, especially around the use of language and the relationship between the deaf and the hard of hearing communities and the many differing needs that are present. These are communities that have a lot in common in many ways, but in other places have some different needs. This is moving from here to another committee. We're at the point of our deadline here. So in order for bills to continue moving and being discussed for a session, they have to be posted and be moving during this period of time. So the intention is to go ahead and move this forward because I think that the differences and the concerns that have been raised can be addressed, and especially the language concerns. Senator Montes Anderson, did you have anything you wanted to add?
Yes,
to that?
Have been working very hard on this bill, and the hard of hearing issues did not come to my attention actually until last week. And we're at the point in time where it is very important for us to get this to Ways and Means. And I talked with DHS, and these are definitely issues that can be actually addressed in the committee. It doesn't need to be in the language because there's definitely a difference, and we definitely need to have the needs of both the hard of hearing as well as the deaf, and they aren't necessarily the same, like you said, Senator Gelster. So I am confident that we're going to be able to do this at the committee level.
Thank you. And with that, Senator Olson, would you be willing to make the motion? We have, there's so many scripts, we're just going to pass them to you at the appropriate time.
Okay, we can do that. Chair Gelster, I move to adopt the dash one amendment stated 4417.
Senator Olson moves to adopt the dash one amendment stated 4417. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered.
Chair Gelster, I move Senate Bill 1018 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Senator Olson moves Senate Bill 1018 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Joint. I forgot to say joint committee.
I'll pick it up in the rephrasing. We got it. All right. This guy moves Senate Bill 1018 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that it be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. And Senate Bill 1018 heads over to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 1018. Senator Olson, we're holding over Senate Bill 263 because we are on the cusp of world peace.
The cusp, okay. I like being cusped.
Yes, all right. And so we close that, and now we will open up a work session on Senate Bill 942.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 942 directs DHS to conduct a statewide study on child safety by July 1st, 2018. It requires DHS to collaborate with the Department of Ed and the Office of Child Care on the study. There is a -1 amendment which replaces provisions. It removes the requirement that DHS conduct the study on child safety, and it requires the finding of founded, unfounded, or cannot be determined in investigations for child abuse. This should be for the -2, which is more or less the same in that part. The -2 also requires those findings. The -2 requires child abuse investigations to be conducted in accordance with statute and result in findings until specified criteria are met. It requires DHS to conduct an exit interview of a child upon removal from substitute care within 14 days of removal, and it sets an operative date for exit interviews for the exit interviews provisions to begin on January 1st, 2018, and it declares emergency and is effective on passage. There is a fiscal light hall pass for us to move the bill to Joint Ways and Means. It's my understanding that we're adding a sub-referral. There is a no revenue impact, and the bill was originally heard on 3/27, and there are currently no sub-referrals, but we're adding one.
And this is eliminating another bill, Senator Dimbro, and I had kind of that big bill that had a lot of kind of school things for foster kids, and this just keeps that exit interview piece being consistent with not adding a lot onto caseworkers, and then that other bill would go away. Senator Olson.
Chair Gilster, I move to adopt the -2 amendment dated 4/7/17.
Senator Olson moves to adopt the -2 amendment dated 4/7/17. Is there any discussion on the -2 amendment?
So just to make clear, because I got them confused, the -1s and the -2s. The -2s is the same as the -1s, that the statewide study won't happen, but just the founded, unfounded, and...
Correct, and the exit interview from foster care.
Yeah, okay, gotcha. All right, thank you.
Any further discussion on the -2? Seeing none, is there any objection to the -2 amendment? Seeing none, so ordered.
Chair Gilster, I move Senate Bill 942 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Senator Olson moves Senate Bill 942 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, is there any joint committee? Seeing none, is there any objection? So ordered, Senate Bill 942 goes on to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means, and I will close the work session on Senate Bill 942 and open up a work session on Senate Bill 53.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 53 modifies licensing fees of in-home care agencies and hospice programs. There's a -1 amendment which modifies the licensing fee amounts. The -1 has a fiscal statement issued, which is up on OLIS, and a no revenue impact. There is currently no sub-referral, and similar to the last bill we just did, my understanding is we're adding a sub-referral to Ways and Means.
Correct. And the reason for that, in Senate Bill 53, you'll remember we heard this bill almost the very first week of session, and there was some disagreement between the Oregon Healthcare Association and the Oregon Health Authority about licensing fees and what the level should be at. The amendment that we have is the place that they got to agreement, and the Ways and Means Committee, we are sending it there so that we can have further conversation about the relationship between licensing fees and the timeliness of processing applications and how much general fund should go into that, which is a Ways and Means discussion rather than a policy discussion. Senator Olson.
Chair Gilster, I move to adopt the -1 amendment dated 4/4/17.
Senator Olson moves to adopt the -1 amendment dated 4/4/17. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered.
Chair Gelser, I move Senate Bill 53 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Senator Olson moves Senate Bill 53 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered, and Senate Bill 53 is on its way to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. So I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 53 and open up a work session on Senate Bill 1027.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1027 permits the transfer of ABLE account funds to the estate or of a deceased designated beneficiary or to another eligible individual's ABLE account. It prohibits DHS and OHA from seeking payment from the ABLE account, and it restricts the Oregon 529 Savings Network, the Oregon 529 Savings Board, board members, and the state from insuring or guaranteeing a rate of return on ABLE account contributions, and limits the ability of those entities for losses, or liability of those entities for losses, rather. It specifies designated beneficiary of qualified higher education account may direct investment contributions or earnings by selecting between offered investment options. It declares emergency and effective on passage. There is a -3 amendment, which authorizes the Oregon 529 Savings Board to enter agreements to provide services related to other states' ABLE programs. And it clarifies that DHS and OHA can only seek payment from ABLE accounts as provided by federal law. There is a indeterminate fiscal statement issued with with the narrative saying it was most likely a minimal, and also a minimal revenue impact statement.
And does the -3 incorporate the -2, or do we need the -2 and the -3?
The -3 is the combined -1
and
-2.
Okay, that's right. You explained that to me previously. All right, Senator Olson.
Chair Gelser, I move to adopt the -3 amendments dated 4/7/17.
Senator Olson moves to adopt the -3 amendments dated 4/7/17. Is there any discussion? I just wanted to say thank you to the Department of Treasury and DHS, who worked together very rapidly when some questions arose at the last minute, and that was really fantastic. So thank you all for getting together on, what, like 4 hours' notice? That was really impressive. Is there any further discussion? Is there any objection to the amendment? Seeing none, so ordered.
Chair Gelser, I move Senate Bill 1027 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that Senator Gelser carries.
Senator Olson moves, I don't think that's part of a motion. Senator Olson moves Senate Bill 1027 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. I'm happy to carry the bill if Senator Olson provides the water.
I have plenty.
All right. I noticed. All right. So the motion passes. It goes to the floor, and we will close the work session on Senate Bill 1027. Senate Bill 819 is the Critical Incident Response Team bill. We are going to hold that bill over to Thursday. Wednesday. Oh, thank you. We're going to hold the bill over to Wednesday. That would be a creative way to kill a bill. We'll hold it over to Mars. Not killing this bill. Holding over Senate Bill 819 until our next meeting. There was a question that arose about an hour ago that needs to be addressed. So I'm just saying that again. We're holding it over, right?
Okay.
So it's officially held over.
All right.
And we're also holding over Senate Bill 268. And we are also holding over Senate Bill 1023. So just to recap, Matt, we're holding over Senate Bill 263, 819, 268, and 1023 until Wednesday.
Okay. So all of them will be up on Wednesday again.
And just for those that are in the process, and I'll come to you in just a second, Senator Montes Anderson, we may, as we wait for amendments to come in and last things come up, we'll be in that process of holding things over, because if something falls off the agenda, then we're not able to move it anymore. I would urge Stacey Ayers and Cynthia and Arthur Towers to have a conversation on 819 after the hearing. Senator Montes Anderson?
Yes, and for those who are here for Senate Bill 1023, there is a meeting this afternoon that will clarify whether this bill should move or not. There's a House bill, and the reason 1023 was put back on the agenda was because they put the House bill back on the agenda. And that had to do with the Public Utility Commission funding sources. So once I know what the verdict is from this afternoon, we'll know whether we will be moving that bill or not.
Okay, very good. Thank you very much. And that, with all of those holdovers, that completes our scheduled work sessions. And we're going to go in the order of the least number of people signed up. We're not able to answer questions. It's not in our rules to be able to do that. I'm really sorry, but I would be happy to talk with you afterwards.
Well, I wanted to know is when the meeting on 10/23 would be, or how we could find out.
Oh, it's not for the public. It's various stakeholders from PUC, and I forget who else is meeting, but I'm sending a staff to just be a sort of a mosquito on the wall to see what's happening.
Okay. All right. Thank you. All right. We are going to open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 948.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 948 requires DHS to adopt rules specifying the types of abuse that disqualify an individual from working at a publicly funded residential facility or a facility that receives public funds. There is a -1 amendment that replaces provisions, and it requires DHS to adopt rules regarding the types of abuse that disqualify a subject individual from employment at a facility, and it prohibits employment of a subject individual in a publicly funded facility if abuse allegation is substantiated, and it bars a fitness determination for such individuals.
Thank you. So Lilia Tenenti and Nan Heim, please. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Chair Gelser and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Lilia Tenenti. I'm the Director of the Office of Developmental Disability Services at DHS. The Office of Developmental Disabilities strives to support individuals and their families within communities by promoting services that are person-centered, flexible, and inclusive in the community. We also strive to ensure the safety of all individuals that are supported in our system. Senate Bill 948-1 calls for the creation of rules that will define the types of abuse that, if substantiated, will disqualify the abuser from working with individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities. It would require the department to deny applications, terminate employees who have committed these types of abuse, and as well, the application would be the same in our community-based agencies. Senate Bill 948 generally codifies existing practice, ensuring that individuals with egregious substantiated abuse are disqualified from working with vulnerable individuals. We appreciate the committee's reviewing this bill and look forward to working with the committee as it moves forward. Thank you.
Chair Gelser, Vice Chair Olson, and members of the committee, my name is Nan Heim, and I'm here today on behalf of the Oregon Resource Association. Our members are nonprofit organizations around the state that provide housing and employment services to individuals experiencing intellectual and developmental disabilities. Programs that I know you're familiar with, like EastCo and Albertina Kerr and Portland Habilitation Center and Opportunity Foundation. I'm here on behalf of the association to express our support for Senate Bill 948, and I've particularly been asked to say that it would be wonderful to be able to go to the same place for information on background checks and abuse, previous abuse records. So thank you for the bill.
Thank you. Are there any questions for this panel? This is our only panel, if that influences whether or not you have any questions for the panel. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Do people want to hold this work session over to Wednesday? Do you wish to work the bill now? Or do we have the paperwork for the bill?
We have a minimal fiscal impact and a no revenue impact for the dash ones.
What's your pleasure?
You're the boss.
Which is why I'm asking for your input.
I have no problem with it.
No problem? Okay. Are we? Okay. All right. So we're going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 948 and open up a work session on Senate Bill 948. Senator, well, it's with the dash one amendment, but I guess we don't know what the date is.
Is it just going to the floor?
It's just going to the floor.
All I need to know is the date that they're
amended. Yeah, we just need the amendment date.
I got it right here. 4/17. Chair Gilster, I move to adopt the dash one amendments dated 4/4/17.
Senator Olson moves to adopt the dash one amendments dated 4/4/17. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered.
Chair Gilster, I move Senate Bill 948 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that Chair Gilster carry.
Senator Olson moves Senate Bill 948 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing what?
You forgot the last part.
You just throw me off. Is there any objection to moving Senate Bill 948 to the floor with due pass recommendation? Seeing none, it goes. Senator Dimbro, would you be willing to carry?
Yes.
Thank you. Are you sure?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Great. All right. So Senator Dimbro will carry. The motion passes. The bill goes to the floor. We are closing the work session on Senate Bill 948. We are making really great time today, friends. I'm going to open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 1029.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1029 appropriates money from the general fund to the Oregon Health Authority for the Senior Farm Direct Nutrition and the Women, Infants, and Child Farm Direct Nutrition programs. It declares emergency and is effective on July 1st, 2017. We have a fiscal statement, or indeterminate fiscal statement issued, and a no revenue impact statement issued. And there is a sub-referral to Joint Ways and Means.
Great. Thank you very much. We have Ashley Adiki, Matt Newell Ching, and Philip Kennedy Wong. And I know that Senator Thompson is coming. We'll just call him up when he arrives. So come on up. You too, Philip. Thank you.
Awesome. Hello, members of the committee. I am Ashley Audicki. I am a community food art organizer from Coos Bay County. And I'm also the farmers market, the market manager for the Coos Bay Farmers Market. I'm here today to testify about the importance of the Oregon Farm Direct Nutrition Program has within communities through providing food assistance to senior and WIC families. While the localized food movement is growing, there are concerns about the lack of access for those who are hungry. A recent study by the University of Wisconsin Public Health Population Institute, county health rate gains within Oregon counties on a scale of 3 to 8.6 on a scale of 10. And that's about the food, I did not print out my testimony, and I'm reading off of my phone and kind of squirreled in the wrong place. So
you're doing great.
Pardon me. I'm going to just restart that sentence again. I apologize. A recent study published by the University of Wisconsin Public Population Health Institute ranks listings of food environment index of Oregon counties on a range of 3.0 to 8.6 on a scale of 10. The food environment index compromises of two variables of limited access to healthy foods and food insecurity. The numbers can be greatly improved by assisting the Oregon Farm Direct Nutrition Program that encourages program participants to purchase local produce at farm stands and farmers markets. As a farmers market manager, I have seen positive benefits of this Farm Direct Nutrition Program brings to community. Weekly, from June to October, I am often busy giving tours throughout the market of the various farm vendors that participate in this program. I'm always happy to see consumers, the participants, engage with farmers and establish relationships each time that they use their vouchers. One moment in particular, I assisted a grandmother who had brought her grandchildren. She was on this, had her own vouchers while her grandchildren had vouchers from their mother, and they were able to buy blueberries, and it was during the height of blueberry season. And I just remembered the glow of the face of her face and her children, grandchildren's face, being able to utilize their vouchers towards something that usually would not be within easy access to them. The senior farm direct nutrition vouchers have been widely used within our rural community. Opportunities for this kind of engagement towards local foods are increased through empowering programs that puts purchasing power in the hands of the consumers. Not only do consumers benefit from the voucher program, but farmers as well benefit. Several farmers at our market have commented on the additional revenue that they have received from these vouchers. As we know, farmers, it's not a lucrative business, so even though $4 may not seem a lot, $4 can, over time, can make a difference. And the vouchers dictate that the only items to be purchased are fresh fruits, vegetables, and herbs, which also benefit farmers, especially in rural communities, because oftentimes there's not much of a marketplace for them while they have to compete with conventional grocery stores. In our community, we have seen just people really get excited about the further growth of this farm direct nutrition program. Last year, we encouraged farmers at our market to do special deals for the $4. So we saw a few farmers do pasta kits, salad kits, salsa kits, that if you had that $4 voucher, you knew exactly what you're going to get for your $4. And I really, really see the benefit of the more growth within this program. So supporting the further growth of the Farm Direct Nutrition Program assists with creating access for families and seniors to local foods, as well as beneficial to the farming community. Limitations on this program would directly affect the progress being made in rural communities, especially what I have seen firsthand in communities such as Coos Bay. Let's stand together and allow farm fresh foods to be within access of all of our Oregon communities. Thank you for the opportunity to testify and for your consideration.
Thank you. Senator.
Thank you, Chair Gilser, Vice Chair Olson, and committee. My name is Chuck Thompson. I represent Senate District 26, and I'm here today in support of Senate Bill 1029 because I've always believed that the Farm Direct Nutrition Program is the exact kind of service our state should be providing to address hunger. Last full session, we secured full funding for this. Now we see in the governor's budget recommendation of just half the funds that are needed, $300,000 instead of $600,000 that was given the last time. Normally, when you see a cut like that, it's reasonable to assume a program has ended or it didn't work very well. But in this case, I have nothing but praise to give the Oregon Food Bank and how they have both made a difference for 100,000 mothers and their families while supporting local farms in the process. We all understand the need to ease hunger in our state. It's also hard to assign dollar values in addressing this need. The practice of the Farm Direct Nutrition Program is easy to calculate. Low-income mothers or seniors are given a voucher for a value of up to $24. They then use that voucher for local produce and gain an education on nutrition, so that same value of the voucher is bounced right back into the hands of a local family farmer. To me, this is the kind of program we should all get behind. Please support 1029. And I'm sorry, Senator Olson, I don't have time for questions today. I have to get back to my other meeting. Thank you.
Thank you for coming, Senator.
You let me get away with that?
You missed your opportunity.
Yeah,
you got to be quicker.
The grief I take.
Madam Chair, And members of the committee, for the record, Philip Kennedy Wong with Oregon Food Bank. I first want to start by thanking several of you who did sign on to this important piece of legislation. I'm not going to say a whole lot other than I wanted to point out that, you know, what we would love to see, given that hunger spiked in Oregon, it's actually Oregon being much more bold in its steps to fight hunger. I know there's been a lot of talk about what we're doing with housing, but I can guarantee you that anyone that is struggling with housing is also struggling with hunger. And for us as a, you know, as a deliberative body to take a look at hunger, you know, not too different than the way that we look at other issues that we are very much concerned about. And so for us, for the Farm Direct Nutrition Program, that means that we should fully consider, consider fully funding the Farm Direct Nutrition Program. And that would be essentially, let me give you the numbers, $3.3 million for low-income mothers on the WIC program, and $376,000 for the low-income senior program. So that would essentially cover all those that are actually eligible for the Farm Direct Nutrition Program, and that is the kind of recommendation that we certainly hope that the Joint Ways and Means Committee will consider if this body, you know, should deem that it should move on to that process. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Chair Gelser, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Matt Newell Ching. I'm the Public Affairs Director for Partners for a Hunger-Free Oregon. We're here to testify today in support of Senate Bill 1029 to fund the Farm Direct program. You know, I think, you know, maybe the best way of describing how the Farm Direct bill works is included in actually some video testimony that was submitted to the record on OLA. So I would encourage you to in the meeting materials, there's a video that was submitted by a woman named Sam McCrary. She's from Portland. She's a participant in the Senior Farm Direct Nutrition Program. And, you know, I know that there is a, you know, a lot of conversations happening, you know, inside this building about our state's budget shortfall. I want to talk about a household budget shortfall and, you know, what happens when, you know, a senior sees her rent increase, but who's on a fixed income and whose food stamps last half the month, but that last half of the month is worried about where my next meal is going to come from. And what Sam says in her, I'll just excerpt from her testimony, but I do encourage you to go in and look at the video. It's about 2 minutes long. She says, programs such as Farm Direct mean so much. When SNAP benefits run out halfway through the month, when you're diabetic, it's the Farm Direct vouchers that make such a difference. And like other testifiers today have said, even though these are, we're talking about $4 vouchers and $20 or $24 over the course of a farmer's market year, it's a significant difference, and it really empowers individuals and families to purchase healthy foods, which is not only helps a family's nutritional status and makes sure that we can avoid problems like diabetes and hypertension, but it also supports Oregon farmers. In 2015, Oregon farmers earned $1.16 million through the Farm Direct program. So this is a real win-win, both for low-income seniors, participants in WIC, and for Oregon agriculture. So we urge your support for this program. And I know others, I know Sue Woodbury is here. She's going to talk more in depth about the program, but I would be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions for this panel? Seeing none, thank you all so much. Thank you very much for your work in bringing the bill. We appreciate it. And our last person is Sue Woodbury.
I had 10 questions for Thompson, but he ducked out.
Yeah, got some relationship issues there.
Absolutely.
Welcome.
Thank you very much. Chair Gelser and members of the committee, I'm Sue Woodbury, the Nutrition and Health Screening Section Manager for the Oregon Health Authority. I'm here today to provide information on the Oregon Farm Direct Nutrition Program for WIC families and seniors. For the past 20 years, Oregon WIC has administered the Farm Direct Nutrition Program, which provides vouchers to WIC families and income-eligible seniors to purchase fresh fruits, vegetables, and culinary herbs from farmers markets and farm stands. The season covers June through October. Seniors receive $24 total for the season, and WIC participants receive $20. Now, $20 and $24 for a senior season may not sound like very much, but a study of the Economic Research Service found the difference in weekly spending on fruits and vegetables between higher-income and lower-income families averaged about $1.43 per week. If you divide the $24 over the 18 weeks that make up the height of the season, that gives $1.33 per week. That small but significant step forward to give access to healthy foods and make it a reality for all Oregonians to purchase those regardless of their income. The same study also found that small increases in income, such as increase in minimum wage or Social Security, would go towards more urgent household expenses and not fruits and vegetables. The Farm Direct program addresses this reality through vouchers that provide a budget just for fresh fruits and vegetables. And access to fresh fruits and vegetables helps children learn healthy eating habits early. 80% of older adults have at least one chronic health condition, and over 50% have at least two. Research has demonstrated that substances in fruits and vegetables, carotenoids and lipoprotein being examples, can reduce the risk of cardiovascular disease, premenopausal breast cancer, and the progression of prostate cancer. Currently, 73% of adults do not consume 5 servings of fruits and vegetables per day. Furthermore, 19% of low-income families buy no fruits and vegetables in a given week. The Oregon Farm Direct program plays an important role in preventing and slowing the progress of the most common chronic diseases and causes of death in Oregon. A more robust Farm Direct program can be a permanent part of Oregon's commitment to prevention versus much more costly treatment of disease. On the hunger front, Oregon currently ranks 6th in the nation in food insecurity. That essentially means that families cannot afford all the food that they need and don't always know where their next meal will come from. Nearly 1 in 6 households in Oregon were food insecure between 2013 and 2015. Single moms in Oregon are even more at risk, with 44.1% being food insecure, compared to 33.8% nationally. About 3 in 5 families who experience food insecurity aren't regularly skipping meals, but they're using strategies like purchasing cheaper, less nutritious foods to stretch their food budget, or relying on food assistance at the end of the month. Purchasing cheaper foods often means not purchasing fresh fruits and vegetables. Beyond the potential health and food insecurity impact for program participants, the Farm Direct Nutrition Program supports Oregon's family farmers and local agriculture. Recipients of these vouchers provide a ready supply of willing shoppers for farmers markets and farm stands. This, in turn, increases the connections between those who grow food and those who eat food and provides an opportunity for the farmer to provide nutrition education. Many farmers who participate in the program tell us that talking with seniors and WIC families who participate each year is a highlight of their season. Thank you for the opportunity to testify, and I'm happy to take any questions you may have.
Thank you so much. That was very, very helpful. Are there any questions? Senator Olson?
Thank you. Would it be possible to amend the bill so that Senator Thompson can't sell any pears?
Chair Gelser and Vice Chair Olson, I will leave that to the work of the committee.
Excellent answer. Well done.
Good answer.
Are there any legitimate questions
no.
for the Nope, seeing none. Thank you very much.
Thank
Is
you.
There anybody else that would like to be heard on Senate Bill 1029? Nope, seeing none. I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1029, and I'd like to go ahead, if people are okay, with opening a work session on Senate Bill 1029.
Well, I wanted to get the amendment in now.
Plan ahead, Senator Olson.
Chair Gelser, I move Senate Bill 1029 to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and the bill will be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Senator Olson moves Senate Bill 1029 to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that it be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. The motion passes, and the bill moves on to Ways and Means. We'll close the work session on Senate Bill 1029. And in the words of the House Revenue Chair, we have exhausted our agenda for today. You have an hour and 15 minutes of free time. Don't spend it all in one place. We're adjourned. Okay.
Another minority report today. Another minority report today.
One place. We're adjourned. Okay.